no tax.
Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. Each and every show, as you all know, we go to Washington, D.C. to find out what's kicking in and around the Beltway. Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News joins us. And, Victoria, the big thing is the president saying, look, guys, I have bent over backwards to get a deal done with the Republicans. So he's upset, isn't he, that he's willing to take a chunk out of the GOP because he was playing nice over the weekend. So now I guess he's frustrated.
He's frustrated, and he had this news conference this morning and continued to say, hey, you know, it's time to rip the Band-Aid off and eat your peas. That was his basic message. I mean, that was the basic message. And he also said, I've put everything on the table. I have put everything on the table, and I'm continuing to put everything on the table, and other people should put things on the table, too. And he made the point that what they're saying about that it's massive tax increases, first of all, there's nothing until 2013. And he says, and in 2013, we're getting rid of these egregious loopholes benefiting jet owners and oil companies and people like me who've been very fortunate.
Yeah.
Afford to pay a little bit more. So he laid it out very, very well, I think, in many ways. I think he did lay it out pretty well.
All right, so he lays his case out pretty well, and John Boehner says, whoa, whoa, whoa. The Speaker of the House made it clear that he never said he was considering any kind of a debt deal that included tax hikes, that he never was attached to that. What was the scoop in Washington? What was more specifically in Washington?
With regarding Boehner?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think with Boehner, one of the questions about him right now is, when anybody speaks, particularly with a Republican, when they speak publicly, you know, in front of the press, are they speaking to the general public or are they speaking to the Republican caucus? And also with Boehner and Cantor, you always wonder, well, who's actually got the power right now? Because reports came out today, which have certainly seemed to be true, that on Sunday night it was Cantor who was doing nearly all the talking in the debt talks in the White House. And the reports are coming out again today that Cantor dominated the conversation in the debt talks today in the White House. So does that mean that he's just chatty, or does it mean that he's dominating? And if that's the case, does it mean that Boehner does not have the negotiating juice that he needs to have, because he's really the one who wanted the $4 trillion deal? He was the one who was going in the same direction as Obama, and Cantor is the one who's going far more hardcore Tea Party.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Cantor took over, as you pointed out. So what happens the next time around? Because, of course, there are more talks that are slated for Tuesday, correct?
That's right. Yeah, every day. That's what the president says.
Of course.
Every day until they get it done. Yeah.
All right, somebody who wants to be president, Michelle Bachmann. Big news. ABC breaks it wide open about Michelle Bachmann's husband's clinic. What was the gossip on the Hill about this?
Well, I mean, I think people feel that this doesn't help her. She's been doing well. The latest polling has her like a teeny weeny bit ahead of Mitt Romney. She even seems to have almost walked away from this bizarre marriage vow, you know, that had the slavery in it. And she's not scot-free on that one. But this one is, she makes a living out of this Christian counseling clinic owned by herself and her husband. And I think this one, now it's been done by ABC News, I think it's going to be investigated by others, and I don't think this one's going to be so easy, because it includes new undercover video shot by a gay rights advocacy group last month, in which it, you know, it shows a man who was advised that prayer could rid him of his homosexual urges, and he could eventually be reoriented.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough one for her to overcome. Speaking of overcoming things, Rupert Murdoch, he just slices it off. When I say slices it off, one of his empires, News of the World, is gone, but it's not gone from investigation. What are they talking about in Washington?
Yeah, in Washington, and there's another element, too, that we should mention briefly. Well, in Washington, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics Today called on the Senate Commerce Committee and the House Energy and Commerce Committee to overlook their political differences and investigate reports which appeared in the Daily Mirror, which is a semi-tabloid, but not quite because it has real news, that 9/11 victims had their phones hacked by journalists from the News of the World or from News International, which is that organization that owns the News of the World. And they say that Congress should immediately investigate whether and to what extent News of the World journalists hacked or attempted to hack the voicemails of American terrorist victims, politicians, and celebrities, as well as whether journalists working for any other news corporation media outlet in the United States engaged in such tactics. So they're making it broader. They are now talking about Fox and the Wall Street Journal.
Wow. Wow. Oh, this is going to be interesting to see where these breadcrumbs lead.
Ooh. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. We haven't heard the last of it for sure.
No.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, as always, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, coming up on America Tonight, we have a special interview with Jim Leyritz. You might remember him, World Series winner with the New York Yankees. Played for a plethora of different teams. I covered Jim Leyritz when he played for the Texas Rangers. I just missed him when I was covering the Yankees in New York, but he's had a wild ride. Many of you remember his trial where he almost went to prison for vehicular manslaughter. Didn't happen. He's had a child that was severely ill and found out when he was 9 months old, and also has been really through the ringer with divorces and whatnot and his own addictions, if you will. So a conversation with Jim Leyritz, who has a new book out. You might have caught him, or he's coming up on Dr. Drew's show. And it's interesting to talk to Jim. He is definitely pound for pound a baseball man, and in fact, he is working with the Newark Bears. So you won't want to miss that. Also, we're going to talk and continuing along those lines, since Betty Ford died, I mentioned in a previous show, at the age of 93, heading into the weekend, what she did to open up the conversation as far as drug addiction. And, you know, now when we say drug addiction, we also mean prescription pills, how prevalent that is. And the Betty Ford Center started that conversation where people would go somewhere for 4 to 6 weeks, and then the family would get involved, and it used to be that you didn't talk about those kind of things, that kind of in hushed tones, but certainly not anymore, I don't believe. I think it's all about getting it out there, and she was one of the front runners to that. So we're going to talk to somebody else who's got a treatment center where they have a 12-step program and they involve families, and she thinks that it's all about being open and all about, it's the Karen Centers, it's all about that conversation and having it with all of those involved with the person who's getting the treatment. Also, a quick reminder, you know, 23 states are under heat advisories. According to the National Weather Service, Monday was just brutal. Kansas City, I know people are listening to us there. St. Louis, excessive heat. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Memphis, Tennessee. Evansville, Indiana. You know, people don't realize that they think they're okay. The next thing you know, they're too weak, they're heavy sweating, they're pale, they're clammy skin, they got that whole thing going on. Make sure you drink a lot of fluids before you go out into that excessive heat, please. Stay with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Question: can functional magnetic resonance imaging be used to read our minds? Author Jose Collazo answers yes in his two new books, America's New Slavery. For more than 13 years, author Jose Collazo has been trying to prove that the U.S. government has the capacity to read a person's thoughts with a revolutionary technology known as fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, and there is proof that it exists. America's New Slavery explores this technology and its many possible applications in national security. Who has access to it? How is it being used? Does America's salvation rest in this technology? These and many other questions are answered in America's New Slavery, the new books by Jose Collazo, available on BN.com, Amazon.com, and Borders.com. America's New Slavery. All Americans should be concerned.
Everybody knows what a huge baseball fan I am, and I am a fan of this guy. Covered him, actually, when he spent some time in Texas. And then, of course, I went to New York, but I missed him in New York. We're talking with former New York Yankees catcher Jim Leyritz here on America Tonight. If you remember, Leyritz was the guy who really pushed the Yanks in 96 when he hit the eighth inning home run that pushed the Yanks, actually, to their first world championship, rather, in 18 years. Trust me, with my family, I knew all about Leyritz even before I actually covered him. And what a wild ride it's been for Jim. If you look at some of the things that have happened to him since that world championship, trade from the Yankees, obviously people know that there was a great big spotlight on Jim when he became a defendant in a vehicular manslaughter case, and all the national attention that got. And, of course, there have been some custody battles and whatnot. He's come a long way, and he's written a book called Catching the Heat with a couple of other baseball experts, Douglas Lyons and Jeff Lyons. It's called Catching Heat, the Jim Leyritz Story. Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Hey, Kate, thanks for having me.
First of all, let's talk about the World Series, and let's talk about one of the highs, because that obviously is one of the biggest highs. Let's talk about your shot that pushed New York right into the thick of it. What was that like when the ball left your bat? Did you know, oh, this is it, this is the whole enchilada, I did it?
You know what it was a great home run, it was a great moment, but it was something that just tied the game up, and you know, we still had a little bit of the game to play, and it's people always ask me, what were you thinking around at the bases? You must have been, you know, so excited. I said, well, I wasn't excited as most people would think, because I hit a home run in 95 that to me was the best moment. It was a walk-off in Yankee Stadium in game two of the playoffs.
Yeah.
But we never went on to win, and we didn't finish that series out, so that home run kind of became a footnote. And all I could think about rounding second base was, okay, this is great. This could be a huge change. But if we don't win this game and we don't win this series, it's just another footnote. So fortunately, the guys picked it up a little bit. We won the next game 1-0, and then we went home to New York and won game 6. And that brought the first championship back to New York in over 15 years.
Yeah. So you go from that moment, you go from those moments, you know, everybody was calling you the king. You spent some time with the Angels, the Rangers, as I mentioned, where I met you, the Boston Red Sox, the Padres, and, of course, the Dodgers. But you start, your debut is in 1990 with the New York Yankees. I mean, the Yankees and all the lore attached to that team. And then eventually you get traded from the Yankees. What was the deal behind that? I mean, what was that like? I mean, it had to be devastating for you.
Well, actually, I tell the whole story in the book about it as far as that Mr. Steinbrenner actually did me a favor. I wanted to be an everyday player. And after the 96 home run, after winning a World Series, I accomplished the team goal that I had set out when I first got to New York. And I really wanted to become an everyday player. And I went to Mr. Steinbrenner and said, you know what, now I would like an opportunity to pursue an everyday role. And he went to Mr. Joe Torre and he said, you know, Joe, is Jimmy going to be any more than what he was this year? And Joe said no. And so Mr. Steinbrenner talked to my agents and said, if you can find me a good deal, if you can find me a trade, he gets somewhere where he can play every day, then we'll go ahead and make it. And my agents were Tom Rich and Adam Katz at the time, and they spoke to the Angels and Bill Bevesi, and he said, you know, so definitely, let's make this guy an everyday catcher. And they made the trade, and it was really a class act by Mr. Steinbrenner. I mean, after the trade was done, I walked into his office in Tampa, where I used to work out in the off season, and you know, I had my bags packed, and I said, "Hey, listen, thank you for everything. I appreciate you. You know, you give me an opportunity to go play every day." And he said, "Well, why are your bags packed? Why aren't you going to be working out again this?" Because I used to work out at the Tampa complex.
Sure.
In the off season, and he said, "Why aren't you working out?" And I said, "Well, I'm no longer a Yankee. I'm now an Angel." And he looked at me. He said, "Go unpack your bag, kid." He said, "You will always be a Yankee. And as long as you want to work out here, this facility is open for you to work out in." Just a really class act by him, and something that made me feel pretty good.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, in the New York papers, it was never portrayed that way. I mean, so it's interesting. You talk about that in your book. But like you say, you wanted to be an everyday guy. And, I mean, eventually, I'm sure along the way, when you talk with other sports writers and whatnot, they wrote things about it. But in New York, it didn't really come out that that's what happened. So I think that's I think that is classy of George to have done that for you, and then to say, "Hey, stick around and still work out." Did you do it? Did you work out there?
No, I stayed around, and then it was funny because the first time we came back into New York to play in '97 with the Angels, I had 2 game-winning hits, and afterwards went up and saw Mr. Steinbrenner, and he said, "Hey, listen, it's one thing to let you work out at our complex. It's another thing that you come in here and you beat us a couple games. When you come in here, take these 3 days off and take it easy on them." So I had a really great relationship with him, and it was, for me, it was a very, very sad day when I was when I was at the All-Star game last year and found out that he passed away.
Yeah, no kidding. The other thing that you talk about in your book, and you're very, very open in this book, I guess that's what I should ask you. Why did you write the book? What made you, was it cathartic for you to write the book?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with, number one, it was a book that I was already in the process of writing about my kids and about leaving the game of baseball and coming home and taking care of my kids and becoming a full-time father because my ex-wife couldn't. But more so, too, because the fact that, you know, I had a lot of fans out there and a lot of people that looked up to me. At the time of the accident, I was speaking about never being drafted, making it to the big leagues, having that moment that every kid dreams of in a World Series. And the way the papers were portraying me and the way the state attorney of Florida tried to portray me was nothing close to the truth of who I really was as a person and what I was going through and the situation that everyone was going through at the time. And I met a woman who heard my story, and I had talked to her about what I had been going through for those 3 years waiting for that day, waiting for that trial. And she said, you know, I think you have an interesting story that you could tell people, that people could draw a lot of inspiration about keeping their faith and keeping belief, and would you consider writing, you know, a book? And I said, well, listen, I already had one in the works before the accident. You know, take a look at it. And she read it, and she came to me, and she said, listen, she said, I think you have a tremendous story that you could reach a lot of different people and change lives. But she said, it's going to take you being truthful and being honest and putting everything out there. Would you be willing to do it? And I thought about it for a little while and, you know, talked to a few people about it and said, you know what, this is, if I know I can change lives, if I know I can make other people make different decisions, and also share some really good stories and some good moments with people, and let my fans know, of course, what really happened those 3 years that were going on. I was very blessed to have that opportunity to write the book, so I decided to go ahead and write it.
Yeah, and talking about that, you almost went to prison for vehicular manslaughter, and you said it was such a long odyssey, and you talk about it in the book. You talk about some things that people didn't know. You mentioned it just briefly there about what happened in Fort Lauderdale. What would you say to people listening to this interview now? Obviously, they can get your book, and they can find out in greater detail, but what would be something that you would reveal to them that they just didn't know about what they were reading about in the papers or watching on CNN or ESPN or someplace else?
Well, I think the most important thing would be, number one, that the accident, that I wasn't the cause of the accident, that it took a jury 45 minutes with half of the evidence, because most of it was left out, to decide that. And, you know, and just, it wasn't, you know, my life at the time wasn't really that bad as it made it out to be. You know, I was very successful in TV and radio. I was getting ready to move my kids full-time to New York with me. I had custody of them. And it was just an unfortunate accident, but really, what left a sour taste in my mouth of the whole situation was the fact that it wasn't covered as a woman lost her life, two children lost a mother, and there was a man that had three children that he had primary custody of, that from one day to the next their kids didn't know about whether he was going to come home or not. It was about, they kept saying a World Series hero, and a state attorney was trying to run for judge, and, you know, it wasn't about the accident and really getting to the truth. It was about personal gain for some people that were involved in it. And like I said, the way the media covered it, I just thought was very harsh and very wrong and really inconsiderate to what the two families were going through at the time. And like I said, just if you read the book and you read some of the things that happened during those 3 years, the delays and the things that were so unnecessary because the state attorney was trying to keep her name out there and, you know, as she was running to become a judge, it was just sad to me that you know, that this was what everyone had to go through and wait for those 3 years.
You mentioned in this about in the book, and you just said it there, the fact that you had primary custody of your three sons. What happened there with your second wife, and what didn't she have problems with drugs, and is that what partially led to you getting the custody? What was that battle like?
Yeah, in 2003 when I got divorced, she went through a psychological testing, and we found out that she was bipolar and that she had some addiction issues, and that she just wasn't capable of taking care of the kids. And unfortunately, the lifestyle that we were leading, she didn't want to leave, and I did. And I wanted to become a full-time father, and I wanted to make sure these kids had a stable background. And to this day, I'm still fighting the family court system down there in Florida to be able to take them and get them away from that lifestyle. And, you know, hopefully soon that will happen, and I plan on hopefully in September getting them full-time and moving them to California with me to start a new life out here.
Yeah. All right, so we'll be back with more with Jim Leyritz in just a second here on America Tonight.
We don't need to convince you that the threat of forced entry is on the rise and that your door locks are inadequate. Now you can virtually eliminate the threat of your door being kicked in with the Door Sentinel. The Door Sentinel offers standalone door kick-in protection for under $67 and installs in minutes on any door. Turn your home or apartment into a fortress. Get the Door Sentinel at SentinelSecurityGroup.com or call 678-648-6757. The Door Sentinel, always on guard for you.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I filed from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
235 years ago, our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence to escape tyranny and oppression. Today, there is a need to reinforce that declaration. What can we do to protect our health as a nation and in our homes from those who wish to control the quality of our air and water? To find out, you need to visit airandaqua.com right now or call 612-767-2777. You will receive a free copy of our Constitution, a newsletter, and bonus items. Air and Aqua. Purify your life today.
Spring and summer bring out the best of nature, but blooming flowers, grass, and weeds emit pollen everywhere. Spring cleaning, molds, funguses, and pollens can cause severe allergic reactions. It's time to fight back. Get a blast of nature's most powerful natural remedy with Oreganol P73, the most powerful oil of oregano available anywhere. Oreganol P73 is an extract of hand-picked wild oregano grown in mineral-rich soils found only in the mountains of the Mediterranean. Experience this powerful and effective spice you can't find anywhere else. It is so effective, even the ancient Greeks used oregano for their health. And it's not just a mere spice. Oreganol P73 is also available as gel caps and as a sea salt based nasal spray. Use Oreganol P73 and stay healthy all summer long. Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Sugarfoot called me last night. He said his girl called him. She said, can I come over? She said, yeah.
And we're continuing our conversation with Jim Leyritz. He's got a great new book out. You need to pick it up. It's called Catching Heat, the Jim Leyritz story. I mean, it is everything. Everything that happened in his life, how he rose through the ranks in baseball and really fought his way to becoming somebody who was an everyday player, somebody that people certainly knew as a primary catcher for a bunch of teams and as a New York Yankees hero, no doubt about that, to some of the other things that he's fought up that we've been talking about. And we were talking about your kids. How, I mean, obviously I can hear that in your voice, Jim, that your kids mean so much to you. And in going through those battles, there's a lot of other men and women, frankly, but there's a lot of men, people don't realize that, that are in similar situations, and it's starting to change a little bit, but it's tough sometimes for the man to get custody. Have you found that's part of this battle that you've had to wage, that you're hoping you're going to get them full time, that it's tougher for the guy?
Yeah, you know, in different states, it's even more difficult, and Florida is one of the most difficult ones. And that's why, like I said, I already had the primary custody, and now it's a matter of there still has not been any change on her part, and I just really want to get those kids away from that atmosphere. But, you know, Alec Baldwin wrote a book about it, how difficult it is for fathers.
Yeah.
And it's really true, and I've read his book, and I've spoke with him many times about it, and just really how the system, and you're right, he said, you know, his awareness that he brought out in his book it's starting to change things a little bit, but it's still not enough. And to me, it's amazing some of the things that aren't taken into consideration when they're thinking about kids and their safety, and more the mental abuse and just the lack of care, and more so than anything else. You know, I know, like in the state of Florida, it's a kind of a running joke with the officers down there that if as long as there's food in the refrigerator and the kids aren't being beaten, we don't care. And it's kind of sad, because to me that's the situation that, you know, in my situation, it's my children not getting to school, you know, and their mother not thinking that's important, and you know, just things like that are just very difficult for me to sit back and watch, you know, three young boys that deserve a chance, and that, you know, at an education, number one, but at a chance at life. And I'm hoping, like I said, in the very near future, that I'm able to get them out of there and give them an opportunity.
Yeah, and if that's not enough, you've had to deal with some other things, like your youngest son has a couple of serious illnesses. One of them is he's got hemophilia C, right? And that had to be rough in dealing with that. And all of this happened right before he was even one. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's the same type of disease as Jorge Posada's son has, and Jorge has a foundation. It's called cranial stenosis. And the first disease that he had was the where he had to have surgery at 9 months. And at the time of the surgery was scheduled, a week before surgery, we didn't know that he had the hemophilia C condition. And I was changing him one day, and he rolled off the bed, and he hit his head, and he got a little hematoma on his head, and it wouldn't go away. And it kept getting bigger and bigger, and we rushed him to the hospital. And thank God that happened, because if that would not have happened, the doctors told us they would have done the surgery without the necessary plasma and blood, and that they would have had some serious issues, and they may, you know, we may have lost them through the surgery. And so, in a way, God worked, you know, a strange miracle where that happened. And he's doing better now. He's 10 years old now, and he's not a true hemophiliac, but there are certain times that if it's a very hard contusion or something like that, he does have to sometimes go in and get a plasma or blood transfusion.
Yeah. You also talk in the book about somebody that I've talked to on this show before. I really like this man, Rick Warren, who people know as the pastor of the Saddleback Church, but also he wrote a book that really made him known to even more people, called The Purpose-Driven Life. How did you hook up with Rick Warren, and what did he do to help you?
Well, my pastor at my church, Troy Gramling in Fort Lauderdale, I met with him not even 3 days after the accident, and just trying to piece things together. And he was kind of my mentor for a while, seeing him weekly and just trying to get through life. And as he was talking to me, he was suggesting some books that I read, and he suggested this book called The Purpose-Driven Life. And it was by this pastor named Rick Warren, like you're talking about. And I read the book, and I, you know, it was one chapter every night for 40 nights, and it really changed my life, and it made me just grow strength to get through every single day and realize that, you know, this was temporary, and I could get through this if I just kept my faith and my trust in God. And through those 3 years, you know, living that way and living the gospel that he preaches, a lot of great things started happening in my life. Even though I was still waiting for trial, waiting for things to happen, my mother found God through some of this stuff. I met my future wife, which was, there's a great story in the book about that, about how her and I met, and really how, you know, you say sometimes love at first sight. It was kind of like that, but at the same time, it was more spiritual at first sight. And I had mentioned to her that she was asking me one night how I was getting through all this without, you know, not drinking and not taking pills or not doing anything. How do you get through it? And I said, my faith and my belief that, you know, God has, you know, he sometimes puts us in situations that we don't want to be in or we don't choose to be in, but that we can learn from and that we can grow stronger. And I said, I read this book called The Purpose-Driven Life, and she said, oh, my God, that's the pastor of my church. And since then, her and I have had a long-distance relationship for 2.5 years, and just as recently as of March, I moved out to California to be with her, and she has 2 daughters, and we plan on bringing my 3 boys out here and starting a new life out here with the church. And, you know, I got to meet Pastor Rick through her a couple times, and he is really excited about us coming out here and starting some programs with the church and just really giving back and becoming part of the community out here in Orange County.
You'll be like the Brady Bunch, you know that, right?
We're one short of the Brady Bunch, exactly.
I love that. Hey, one last one. Everybody's going to want to know, besides obviously talking about this book, you're also coaching baseball. You're also involved in baseball. Tell everyone where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, as of right now, one of my best friends was a guy named Tom Settner who offered me a job right after the accident happened, or after the trial was over with, and said, I want you to get back on the field. That's where you belong. And gave me a job, and he went to his manager, who is Tim Raines, one of my former teammates, and said, you know what, let's bring in Larry to the coach. And Tim Raines said, yes, exactly. He's went, you know. And so I've been working there for the last few months as a pitching and hitting coach for the Newark Bears with also Ron Karkovice. And it's a great thing. It's, you know what, it's all about kind of my story. It's about guys that never got drafted, guys that just want that chance to play in the minor leagues and possibly the major leagues. And it's a really great opportunity for me, number one, to be a part of that, but also what I did to each one of those guys is when they first came in, I said, here, take this book. Read this. There's a lot of great stories in it, and it'll tell you how to get there and all the sacrifices you have to make to get there. But there's also some great stories and things that you might make different decisions, and you can, you know, change your life and not go through some of the hardships that I went through and make some better decisions than I did. And, you know, it's just, like I said, it's just a great opportunity for this book to be able to reach so many different people in so many different ways.
All right, Jimmy Leyritz, again, Catching Heat. It's his story. Thanks so much and continued success and good luck with everything, Jim. Thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. And like I need to plug, if people want to pick up the book or a signed copy of the book, they can go to jimleyritz.com. And get a copy. But I appreciate you giving me the time. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course. Thank you. All right, it's interesting in talking to Jim Leyritz and listening to his story, the roller coaster ride and what happened to him in the last really handful of years and now coming out on the other side. As we approach that midway point, because the All-Star Game, of course, is on Tuesday, a sad note here. Many people listening to us in Brownwood, Texas, on our great affiliate KXYL, 1240 AM, there was a fireman who took his young son to the Texas Rangers game, and unfortunately, when Josh Hamilton, an outfielder for the Rangers, tossed a ball into the stands after a batter hit a foul ball, the father, just a great guy, his name is Shannon Stone, just stuck out his glove, reached for the ball, lost his balance, flipped over the railing of the outfield seats that he was in with his son, Cooper. He fell about 20 feet, crashed head first, if you haven't heard the story, into an area near the scoreboard, kind of near seats where I just recently sat, and hit his head and had the fatal injuries. Not immediately. He died of blunt force trauma, but when it first happened, they took him out on a stretcher. He was talking. He was worried about his kid. He mentioned that over and over again. I mean, a very sad story, and the people in Brownwood are such salt-of-the-earth kind of people that so many knew him. He was 39 years old, and as I said, he was a firefighter. This happened last Thursday, and I think the town and certainly the family still in shock, just all for trying to get this baseball. This is one of those weird things that happens, and his six-year-old son was with him, which is just a reminder of how fragile life is and how fragile life can be, certainly, when you're not thinking of it. You're there just enjoying the game, soaking it in, making the trek to Arlington with your son. Imagine the conversations that they were having driving up to the game. And I think all of the Rangers organization just choked up. Rangers president Nolan Ryan said that the club is going to look at the height of the railing at the stadium, even though they are higher than what the code limits are for the city. They're still going to look at that. And they're working on making changes. I found out something that was interesting in baseball. The Philadelphia Phillies don't allow the outfielders to throw balls into the stands. You know, when people yell, hey, up here, throw me a ball, and that kind of stuff, they don't allow that to happen. They'll throw a ball to the ball girl, and if somebody comes down, the kids come down to the railing, they'll hand them the ball, but they don't flip a ball up. However, I don't think you can pin this on Josh Hamilton. It was just a sad, freak thing that happened, and a very, very awful, awful story for the Stone family. We can't say enough about their loss in the great game of baseball. He was just soaking it in. Shannon Stone laid to rest on Monday. Stay with us.
The number one secret to having great health and long life is having high levels of glutathione. This master antioxidant is required by your body to stop free radicals, keep cells young, remove chemical and heavy metal toxins, support immunity, support liver functions, stop inflammation, and much more. The results of optimal levels of glutathione in your body are more mental and physical energy, stronger immune system, greater endurance, and more. Do you know the number one secret superfood that helps increase your glutathione levels by 64% or more? It's unheated whey protein powder from grass-fed cows. This health food is amazing in its ability to do so much for virtually everyone. Introducing One World Whey, an industry-first unheated whey protein powder from grass-fed cows. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
Hey, Brian, if you could do just one thing today to ensure your family's food security, what would it be?
That's easy, Bill. I'd head straight to soupbeansurvival.com.
Soupbeansurvival.com?
I know, Bill, it sounds crazy, but this ancient secret has been around for over 8,000 years, and it truly is nature's super survival food.
Really, Brian? The number one survival food? Well, certainly the forgotten survival food.
Absolutely, Bill. The folks at soupbeansurvival.com scoured our planet to find the very best heirloom seeds, to truly find nature's super survival food.
Brian, these aren't grocery store beans, are they?
No way, Bill. You're not going to find these beans in any grocery store. These are the absolute highest quality beans in the world. Visit soupbeansurvival.com. That's soupbeansurvival.com for all the information you're going to need for nature's super survival food.
You've been lied to. Lied to by the Wall Street propaganda machine, the government, and the talking heads in the media. The market is in for another crash. Real estate is already in a double-dip recession, and if you want to keep your hard-earned money safe, this message is for you. My name is Brett Kitchen, and after losing 35% of my money when the market crashed, I said enough is enough. I searched and discovered a way to safely grow my money, participate in potential double-digit gains, but also have my money protected when the crashes come. Plus, it could save you thousands in taxes. I want you to get a free copy of my new book, Safe Money Millionaire, where I share this powerful tool that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney used to safely grow their wealth. Call 1-800-675-1640 right now to get your free copy. Again, that's 1-800-675-1640. I'm giving away a limited number of copies today, so call 1-800-675-1640.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. We were just talking with Jim Leyritz, and he mentioned the fact that his wife was diagnosed as bipolar, and she had drug addiction problems, his ex-wife now, and the fact that he was embroiled in that bitter custody battle to try to get his three sons away from the situation, and how tough and heartbreaking it was for him, and the fact that the kids weren't even getting to school. She couldn't do that, and just how rough it was to deal with that situation. Well, somebody that was really a big flag waver when it comes to prescription drug abuse, when it comes to alcoholism, and you know all that sort of stuff, was the former First Lady Betty Ford. She definitely opened the door for honest, I think, open conversations. And of course, everybody knows about Betty Ford and the clinic itself, and how that helped. The Betty Ford Center helped so many people get their life on track. And we mentioned this, the fact that she died Friday at the age of 39. So we've been talking about what's the legacy of hope that she's left, and how have things changed or not changed when it comes to getting help. So we're pleased to welcome to the show somebody who knows all about this, Amari Durham, who is with the Karen Treatment Centers, and they have an interesting story to tell. In fact, they're the largest non-profit residential treatment center in the United States, and of course this show is in Dallas and is in Illinois and Connecticut and all over the place, in Florida, etc. So I know many of you are suffering with some of these problems. So, Amari, we are thrilled to welcome you to the show. Once again, thanks for joining us.
Well, Kate, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to carry on Betty Ford's legacy and take away the cloak of shame and darkness and talk about these issues, such as addiction.
Yeah, don't you think that's right what I said, that she kind of broke the conversation open because she was the first lady, and you didn't talk about that kind of stuff. All of that was in the closet. You didn't talk about alcoholism. You didn't talk about prescription drug abuse, that kind of thing. I really do think she paved the way for that, maybe because she was high profile and because she was willing to talk about it. I say good for her because it would have been easy to keep that quiet. And it probably was advised to her. In fact, I know that from a pretty good source that it was advised to her originally. Geez, we don't really, you don't really need to go out there on that big limb. And she was having none of it. And do you find that that helps? That helps the cause. And that at this point now, because we're talking really about the 70s and then moving forward, the 80s, the 90s, etc. Now where we are. Do you find that now more people are willing to open up and talk about the problems?
Well, you know, the question is so important because what we want to do is when we open up and we talk, we want to talk about the disease of addiction. We want to separate the behaviors and the acts that might occur as a result of that disease, but the shame of those acts should be on the act themselves, not on the individuals. And that's what Betty Ford does when she leaves us this legacy of openness. It allows us to say, hey, I have a disease, I have an issue, and the shameful things I did while I was under the influence has nothing to do with who I am as an individual. As an individual, I need help. I need someone can help me get to this disease of addiction, treat me and my family, because it is a family disease. It's not just the individual who's actually dealing with drugs or alcohol or whatever, sex, whatever their addiction happens to be. So it's just critical that we have open dialogue and we don't have shame on those individuals, that they can speak and seek help without any guilt.
Yeah. Tell us about the Karen Treatment Centers and what you did. I mentioned that largest nonprofit residential treatment facility. That's pretty big if you're talking about the entire United States. When did all that happen?
You know, this is such an exciting thing, Kate. We actually, about 5 weeks ago, became the largest nonprofit provider with an acquisition in Florida. We started about 53 years ago on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, in Warnersville, and great story. A guy was arrested, went to jail, and he was very blessed. When he got out of jail, he had an opportunity to go back home to his over 100 acres and have a home and a wife that would support him. Met a bunch of people in jail that didn't have that same opportunity and said, hey, guys, come on over to my house if you don't have any place to go when you are when you're released. And that's really the nascent of the Karen Treatment Centers. These gentlemen would come over, and the guys would come into the kitchen and the home and have these great conversations. And quite frankly, the women would be out quite cold in their cars. And Dick Karen's wife said, hey, you know what? You guys don't need to be cold out there. Come on in. And that really started the AA and Al-Anon approach that we have for Karen. At Karen, Texas, where I'm located, in addition to all of our facilities, we have a 12-step-based program. And when that program started in Pennsylvania and outgrew that facility, we then expanded into Boca Raton, Florida. After we outgrew that, we came here to Dallas, Texas. And with the last acquisition in Boca, again, became the largest nonprofit treatment provider in the country. Again, 12-step-based and really eager to help as many people as we can in partnership with other great facilities.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit, because how important it is for the spouse to be involved. It's one thing if somebody gets help, but it's the tunnel that everybody's going through. What do you find if everybody's not on board? In other words, somebody's just, they've got a big family, but they're just solo. They're just flying solo. The rest of the family doesn't want to be involved in it. Do you find that that's a lot tougher? Obviously, your approach is the other way, so you've probably found, I'm assuming, that that works better.
Yeah, you know, because it is a family disease, that you have someone who's really quite sick, and then you have all of these people that surround them that often think that they're helping but create an environment that's not so healthy. So, for example, your husband or your wife is ill, and you call the office and say, hey, he or she is sick. Or, you know, someone has fallen and they've injured themselves in a drunken stupor, and you help pass that off as it was a simple accident and then, you know, just merely wasn't paying attention to what one was doing. If you don't really address the codependency and the enabling that occurs, sometimes so unknowingly, you can't break that cycle. So programs like we have here at Care in Texas have a program dedicated to the patient, but then we also have a separate family program where we really help the family understand the disease and understand what they can do to keep themselves healthy, to keep them on a really good path. Because here's the deal. Kate, if the person who's getting treatment relapses, you don't want the entire family to fall apart. So they have to take care of themselves, and the addicted individual has to take care of him or herself. And then that's when you create a really healthy environment.
Yeah. Do you find that a lot of the people in your treatment centers, I'm sure it's for a plethora of things, but do you find that prescription drug abuse now is getting bigger?
It is indeed. And I think, Kate, the reason it's getting bigger is because that's an addiction that starts with a legitimate use. Hey, my doctor prescribed it. How can it be bad? You know, he or she said I needed it. And so you use it on label, and you use it as you're meant to. And then you just start using it a little bit more. And it really does then grow to such use levels that it becomes abuse or addiction. And, again, it all started with how bad can it be it was given to me. And it really has seen a significant rise of late.
Yeah. What's the rewarding part of this for you? I'm assuming when people really go through the program and things change and their life changes and you hear their stories and you hear what's happening in Boca and you hear how the program has worked for many people. Is that the satisfaction for you?
Well, Kate, you know, I wish you could see me smiling when I answer this question, because my joy here, what I experienced working with Care in Texas, is that I, like Betty Ford, I should hope to be so influential, can have a dialogue in my community where people can ask for help without shame. That is my goal in life with this role I have. I want to be able to have people find help, ask for help, and not feel ashamed about it. And then when I see these individuals come to Care in Texas and when they leave and they're healthy, any of our facilities in Pennsylvania or in Florida, and they are healthy and their life after treatment is so much better than when they came to us, it is absolutely rewarding. You know, people really are reluctant to step out of their lives. They think, I can't do residential treatment. I can't step away from my family, my job, my responsibilities for a 4 to 6 week stay. I can't do it. It is so amazing those who actually overcome those barriers that are in their mind, and they leave and they tell me, the life I have, having stepped away, is so much better than the life I had before I got to you. It was the smallest sacrifice to be selfish to take care of myself and give my family the opportunity to take care of themselves by pursuing treatment at Care. It's so incredibly rewarding, Kate. And these are the strongest people I know. They fight every day for their sobriety. They walk their walk. They have accountability. Their integrity of how they have to live their lives so that they can stay away from things that distract them and pull them back into this disease is so admirable. I watch and I am in awe of what they accomplish every day. And for some people, it's less of a struggle than others. But every day there is something that might trigger them to think about the life that they had before they had recovery. And the fact that they make choices to avoid those pitfalls is just so admirable. I find it the most fulfilling experience I could possibly have imagined beyond my dreams.
Yeah, you summed it all up right there. What a perfect way to end this. Amara Durham, Care and Treatment Centers. Go to Karen, if you're listening to us, .org with a C. So it's Caron. Thank you so much for popping on and continued success with the programs.
Kate, thanks so much for letting everyone in your audience know that this is something we all can get help with, and there is no shame with it.
Thank you.